welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, opening up choices for people with cancer for the last 20 years. This week, we focus on men and cancer. Integrative oncology is primarily the domain of women. They are drawn to look into all the possibilities for self-care to a far greater degree than men. I've never felt that men's reluctance to engage in integrative oncology was for any good reason, and I've been vocal about it for years. Things have improved since the early days of Yes to Life, when we barely ever saw any men at all. At times they can make up 20% of a group now, but that still leaves a long way to go. Dr. Georgios Mavropalias is someone who has taken a particular interest in supporting men with prostate cancer, and he's attracting quite a following. So I'm keen to find out more about what he's doing. Hi, Georgios. Welcome to the Yes to Life show.
Thank you for having me.
So for the summary description of what you do on your LinkedIn page, you write, "I help men with prostate cancer succeed in their treatments, relieve symptoms and side effects, get healthier and stronger without losing their masculinity, energy or quality of life." So we had a bit of a chat before this interview, so I know that's one of the things you do, but it was sufficient to make me want to find out more, and especially once I took a look at your background and your experience, which is fascinating. The thing that jumps out at me, looking at all the things you've done, is at a certain point you made the decision to move from academia into direct support, although I think you've still got a foot back there in academia. But I'm interested to know what prompted you to make that move.
Yeah, look, the way I got into what I'm doing now is I was fascinated in general by the power of exercise to change the body in ways that are magnificent. In my PhD, I was working with simply muscle physiology. So I got healthy individuals and I was giving them a form of exercise called eccentric exercise. And I managed to observe very potent muscle growth with very little time and effort of exercise per week. And it was quite impressive how much the muscles grew with that form of exercise. So I was approached and I wanted to basically do some more research on that. So I was approached by an institute that we had in the uni, and they said, okay, well, men who undergo hormone treatment for prostate cancer, they tend to lose muscle mass quite fast, and it's very, very difficult to preserve this muscle mass in the absence of testosterone. Can we do something? So that's when I got into the basically the field of applying exercise as a medicine to either counteract a symptom or a side effect. And we saw some very powerful muscle growth, actually, during hormone treatment on men with prostate cancer. Then I started researching the effects of using exercise to reduce cancer fatigue in women with breast cancer undergoing radiation treatment. And then I was looking to go into more aggressive cancers where there is a bit of a syndrome called cancer cachexia, which causes like muscle wasting. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in academia, you have to continuously hunt for funding, so I wasn't able to secure that. So I had to move into doing clinical trials for oncology, so cancer clinical trials at a hospital with no sort of relationship to exercise, simply new pharmacological treatments. But weirdly, that shift or out of need to find a salary gave me a lot more understanding of cancer. In more advanced cases, I was working a lot with pancreatic, colorectal cancers, prostate cancers, skin cancers. And then I shifted back into academia as a lecturer and a researcher for 2 years this time to giving telehealth exercise, so remote exercise to and behavioral change to people with multiple sclerosis. Now, while all this was happening, after I left the research position with Exercise for Cancer, somehow, I don't know why, I like to come back home from work during the day and make videos. And sort of like I was reading about cancer and exercise, and something was calling me to make videos. So on my channel, I was making like amateur videos. I was trying to inform people about exercise during cancer. And I started getting a following. And people were sharing their experience. And sort of like I put up a website and people were reaching out. And I started getting some people interested to work. And when I was working with someone, I was giving them a program of exercise. People were mostly interested in nutrition, mostly men with prostate cancer I was working with. So I started to give them a program that involved everything. We tried to improve their sleep, reduce their side effects, their symptoms of cancer, nutrition, some herbs and supplements, some exercise or physical therapy. I was getting this immense gratitude from them, and I could see how like a vast impact it had in their daily life. And then I was starting to get like these comments on my YouTube channel and my YouTube videos that were just pure gratitude, like thank you for doing this, thank you for caring. And it wasn't the same publishing a paper, Robin. I gotta say, like, even though publishing a paper, running a randomized controlled clinical trial with exercise, very well designed, is basically what I am practicing, what I'm basing my practice right now on, delivering it to people is... And the gratitude that they give me, and sort of like the human connection, I can see like in a primal level the effect that my work has. Made a huge difference for me. So yes, even though I'm still supervising PhD students, even though I'm still involved in research projects, I'm focusing straight on education through YouTube and working one-to-one with mostly men with prostate cancer, but I basically work with different, like people with different types of cancer so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's it.
What a great story. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so, there are a lot easier things you could have taken as your main subject other than men with prostate cancer, because as you must have experienced, so if you go into the field of women with breast cancer, they're all out there looking like mad for things to do, to engage with, to improve their situation. And that's not exactly the common situation with men. I think we agreed in our last chat. So is there something in particular that made you decide to focus your attention on men?
I started doing my research on men with prostate cancer, and that's a good question, actually. I could see the impact of hormone treatments on, and I could see how easy it was through targeted exercise to not only manage and slow down the loss of bone, the loss of mass, the fat gain, but actually built on that. And it's sort of, I got stuck and fascinated with this puzzle. How can we, it was difficult. It was a puzzle for me. And my brain loves to solve puzzles, let's say.
Okay.
So that was the case, I would say. Now, for men, even though in, for example, colorectal cancer, I would work with both women and men, men tend to express a gratitude when I do what I do and I work with them that is felt. Like, even though they might not use very, like, words that are... very expressive, you could feel like this changed my life. And I could see, I'm a man myself, I haven't gone through cancer, but I can understand that many men today, and in general, when they're going through a tough situation, they are being taught from a very young age to toughen up and deal with it. That's what men do. So when they can basically get some help, and get some help that really helps them, that is deep, that's not superficial, and it does make an impact, you could feel their gratitude in a way that is, is felt really deeply.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, look, it's a really interesting topic. I'm going to come back round to talk some more about the kind of men's approach to tough situations a bit later on, if you can. I'm just, for a minute, I'd like to go back and just find out how you got into health anyway, what attracted you to go into that whole field in the beginning, and why you're interested. There's a lot of the things that you said that you immediately reached out and looked for in order to give answers to people and help them, which are not in the normal panoply of, you know, pharmaceutical drugs and what have you. These are things, when you talk about herbs and supplements and things like that, you're immediately looking in a territory, which is the territory I operate in, integrative medicine. So what drew you to that?
Okay. What got me into health? Well, I grew up obese. And for some, I was basically hating exercise. I was hating sport until I started doing kickboxing, so combat sports. And for some reason, like, again, like being in a community and a group of men, that was men's only class, coincidentally, back then, that gave me strength, purpose, that got me, okay, I started loving exercise. I started loving using my body to release stress, to make friends. So that got me so basically hooked and loving exercise that I said, I want to be a kickboxing coach. So that's why I went to sport, to study sports science. In sports science, I discovered, wow, there is a lab there and the people are pipetting stuff. That is exciting, science. So that got me into science, deeper into the muscle, and then that connects to the story that I said before. Now, your question is, how did I choose my approach with herbs and natural things?
You know, why do you think like that? I mean, it's a particular way of looking at health.
Look, I'm not, so I see very, the field is very divided, let's say, and very extreme. So there's two extreme poles. There's either the medical approach where we have clinical trials, medical treatments, this is it. And many people report that I go to treatment for cancer and in the hospital, the food they serve me is full of sugar, it's fully processed. It can't make sense how you want me to get healthier and how you want me to heal from cancer, and you're feeding me food that has been shown to cause cancer, like processed, horrible food. And when you are, like, people are hearing exercise is great for you during cancer, which was not what they were saying to people with cancer 2 decades ago. Now, because the evidence is coming out and they're asking their doctors, they're like, oh, yeah, it's good to do. You can go for a walk. I don't know. So there is no there is no respect from the medical establishment, as in most of them. Some doctors are actually waking up on the power of exercise and nutrition. Now, there's the other field where there, the other hand, where people are like, don't trust Big Pharma. They're lying to you. They're trying to get your money. They want to keep you sick. I'm not leaning into any extreme. I'm sort of, and always what I'm trying to coach people is either with balance. There is, in advanced cases, there is the need to, like with cancer, you need to do some medical treatments, especially with advanced cases. But you cannot, and the treatment will be for one instance where you're going to have a surgery, or let's say like a form of a radiation treatment or a chemotherapy treatment. But then that's the 0.5%. The 99.5% of the time, lifestyle is your medicine. And it's not something that people of all time, alchemists or some people in the jungle are saying. There is very clear clinical evidence from multiple meta-analysis, randomized controlled clinical trials now that shows that people who move more tend to have less aggressive forms of cancer and less metastases. They tend to live longer. The diet makes has clinical effects on the cancer. So for example, for prostate cancer, we know that certain, not only just the general diet, the design of the diet, but also certain foods have a clinical effect on PSA, which PSA can not only be used as a marker of diagnosis, or basically like a yellow light to be doing a scan, to be checked for prostate cancer. But if you do have prostate cancer, it is a marker of tumor load. So we can see the diet and certain foods have an impact on the tumor, on the cancer. It makes the cancer slow down the growth. It makes it less likely to metastasize. And if it has already metastasized, it slows down the growth of metastases. It reduces side effects from treatments. It reduces symptoms of cancer. And the effects are not maybe, they're very powerful. They're very powerful to the effect that we have foods, for example, that can go head to head with medications like Flomax that helps urination. So there is that. Now, again, I'm not saying do one or the other. I say, why is there such a division? Why can't we marry it one with the other, so they can amplify and work with each other? There seems to be some sort of like two military camps that if you're in the one, you have to be against the other for some reason.
Absolutely right. Well, you know, that kind of polarized thinking, it's got into all sorts of walks of life, none more so than medicine. And it's proving very tough to get out of the way. But integrative medicine means exactly what you said. Just let's forget all the where does it come from. Does it work? Will it help? Is the question. That's the question the patient has. And it's the question that healthcare workers should also have to be working for their benefit. So, yeah, right with you there.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so at this point, you've got a pretty broad view of the biology of cancer and of health and well-being. And you, as you say, you started offering the benefit of that knowledge and experience to individuals in the form of telehealth consultations. So do you want to say a bit more about what's on offer?
Yeah, look, you mentioned integrative medicine. And I started this journey as an exercise physiologist, basically, using exercise as a medicine, not just for specific exercises to reduce side effects. So we have special exercises to reduce, for example, urinary incontinence or fatigue or erectile dysfunction. Then you have exercises that basically reduce the bone loss from different hormone treatments. And then it's absolutely not just possible, but essential to build muscle, build strength during different types of cancer, different treatments of cancer, make your cardiovascular system healthier. Nutrition is a major part. Not just to support the and allow the exercise, but also build immunity, you know, preserve the immune system, improve the gut, because the gut takes a toll through every medical treatment, basically. And again, it's well established. The nutrition you have specific for your type of cancer can reduce the growth of cancer and the chance of cancer coming back, so recurrence. It's been out there. I'm not saying things out of my head. Multiple clinical trials. There needs to be something more, however. So, for example, that's why I'm a health coach. That's what I'm doing now. Because I could, when I work with people, and when, for example, someone goes to most dietitians, how they used to work is, okay, I assessed your body weight, your body fat percent, like your body composition. Here's your diet. They might ask you, what do you like eating? So they might like make modifications. You start motivated, you go to the gym, you follow the diet. And then 3 weeks later, you're back into your old lifestyle. So with coaching, with health coaching, what I try to do is basically go deeper into the psychology of a person. If a person can't stop eating at night, or they're eating sugar all the time, or they're eating like a lot of food, there is a certain psychological sabotage in there, which we try to explore and find. The excess food, or some other, like smoking. Like I've had men that, yeah, I have prostate cancer, I go to the gym, I eat well, and they smoke as well. So this sabotage has a psychological basis. You can't just tell the person, don't smoke.
No.
They know. Like everybody yeah. knows today a little bit what they should do.
Yeah.
Everybody knows they should eat more vegetables, move more, eat less sugar and processed things, not smoke, not drink alcohol. The problem is not lack of knowledge. The problem is going deeper into the psychological factors of why a certain behavior manifests, and you're sort of sabotaging your own health and your own body. That's what I'm trying to do. When I work with people online, and I work with people throughout the world, we do the ones-to-one. I give them education on what they should be eating, trying to basically make it work around their current lifestyle, so it's not such a big change, and slowly introducing lifestyle changes. But I will go deeper into the psychology of why certain behaviors and certain daily habits where are manifesting and they seem to be uncontrollable. We'll work on that. And I have to say, lately, like with a lot of my clients, I will also do life coaching. I want to basically get this diagnosis of cancer and turn it on its head, making it work for them, not as a this horrible, I was dealt this horrible card. What if we actually get it to completely change your life in such a powerful way that you wouldn't be able to do, almost like if you hadn't gotten cancer? Now it's a big trigger for change. So I tap on that and we make the changes, we go deep, and we can start. Many times I've heard people say, like, I started living. Like, it's almost like a gift, like some people said, that I was given this diagnosis and I had to take control of my health and my life and live a more purposeful life. And very recently, because especially, as we said, men, women, when they get a cancer, they reach out. Men, they check out. In most cases, there's always exceptions. I've recently lodged for what I do. I still have the one-to-one, but I will also get those men to participate in a prostate cancer health coaching and support group. So we will touch base once a month. I'll give a bit of a mini lecture on a topic. So last couple of weeks ago, we had the eating carbohydrates and sugar during prostate cancer. Should I eat? Should not eat? Should I go keto? I demystified this with evidence. And then the men, they were US, Canada, Europe, they were introducing, sharing their stories, touching base with each other. The camaraderie, the support that I help facilitate, yeah, it's extremely needed during this time.
Fantastic. So it's two really powerful ingredients you got there. One is the cancer itself, which, as you say, is a massive motivator, can be, and can precipitate an absolute turnaround for somebody in their life. They've been going one direction and they turn around again, a completely different one from then onwards. And they're the people who say, it's the best thing that ever happened to me, extraordinary enough, because there's nothing nice about cancer. But that is its potential. And, I'm really keen that more and more people are aware that that is the silver lining, if you like, to this horrible thing called cancer, is that you can use it to your advantage to actually make the life you want. So that's fantastic. But the other thing you just described, which is the power of community, of groups, which all too many men are starved of far too much, is a fantastic thing. I mean, it's like your kickboxing group, the same thing, isn't it? That you're actually creating groups for men to come together on another basis. But, the coming together in itself is a massive act of healing, just to actually share on that kind of level, to have that some degree of vulnerability together, to the thing that gets generated very quickly in a group like that is the feeling that everybody in the group wants everybody else to succeed. And that's powerful medicine.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, well, look, just going on to talk about men some more. Yeah, I mean, you know, we had a chat before, as I say, before this interview, and I appreciated immensely your perspective on the issues surrounding the low uptake of men when it comes to integrative medicine approaches to improving their own health, their own outcomes, their own longevity. So, you know, this thing that looks superficially like a kind of disinterest or an over-reliance on the powers of conventional medicine to deliver all the results, this can actually be a symptom of something far deeper to do with matters of self-image and that go right across the board with male conditioning throughout society. I think you've got a great perspective on this. I wonder if you can tell us what you think are the forces at work in men to keep them away from scientifically supported methods improving their life and outcomes, which is what we've been talking about.
I say that the right doctors are lifesavers. That's why when someone is, let's say they got like a high PSA, I immediately tell them, find a urologist that is a specialist on prostate cancer. Because I've read some, like, I'm not a medical doctor, but I have worked with men, so I know now what I should expect from their doctor. And yeah, I've seen some stuff that is like, how is it possible that this happened nowadays? Like, after, yeah. Men, I have to say, a lot of times, they are not... I can see a lot of men not have that have learned or have lived in a way that it's self-abandoned. Like, I'm there for my family, I'm there for my wife, for my children, and I do things, I provide. And I have to keep providing, I have to be functional. And many men, when they get a diagnosis of cancer, they almost like immediately blame themselves. Like, how, what did I do wrong and this happened? What did I do wrong now? Instead of having a like compassion for themselves and feeling like, my God, I got this. I have to take care of myself. I need the best treatment. They almost treat it like another thing on my list that I have to take care of now and I messed up. It's a very sad thing to see, which I immediately try to change. Then I have to say, there is in the medical establishment, there is a bit of a, I don't know why this is called, and I hope this goes. Men are being told after 70, there is no need to check your PSA. If you have prostate cancer, you're gonna die from something else before that. Or you're 70 now, your prostate cancer is a low Gleason score, as they call it. Basically, the chance of it getting metastatic or aggressive is low. It's okay. You're going to die from something else. Almost like this is something empathetic to say, something that's going to make them happy. So men are very disposable, I think. a little bit. In many cases, they're treated as something disposable.
Right.
You are there to produce and perform, fix yourself, and don't worry about living. As long as you're productive, you're okay. I don't like that. No, this is not.
No, I don't like that. Yeah, well, you used the word compassion in relation to yourself, you know, looking at yourself compassionately, thinking, blimey, you know, I'm going to need some looking after here. I need some help. That is the thing that's, is notably missing. You know, kindness, compassion don't seem to be qualities that men are openly supposed to display or to need in any way. And funnily enough, we've built institutions in that image, and we have healthcare, which looks just like that, as a whole, as a reflection of men's attitude. And even though we've got this vast influx of women now, I think there are more women doctors than male doctors in our country, they haven't yet managed to make a significant dent in that edifice, except for a few notable exceptions, who I know. Who are doing a bloody good job trying to, but you know, it hasn't really changed yet. It's still largely not allowed to show a lot of kindness or compassion. That if it happens, and it does happen, of course, it's sort of under the radar. It's not within the rules. It's being done on the side, and I think it's extraordinary how we deal with this situation everywhere, and it's. It's a legacy of abuse, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the us and them warring factions that you referred to earlier, within healthcare. Well, that's a result of this kind of abusive situation where people who really can only see things in black and white, they're very scared, but they're extremely controlling and manipulative and make sure they're powerful, get to the head of these places and start saying to everybody, if you don't line up behind me, you're with them and you'll be out. And that's what we have. We have these institutions that are built by men for men, and they're abusive. I think there's a massive legacy. You know, when I think back to like whole generations of 18-year-olds being sent out into the trenches to war, witnessing the worst imaginable things, immense suffering, all of this, coming back to no support whatsoever, get on with your job now, be a man, and living a life of, you know, enormous repression as a result, quite understandably, but they're kind of seen as sort of emotionally illiterate. You know, that's how they're described. But actually, they're damaged immensely, and they pass that on, of course, to their sons. Their sons will pick it up, whether they were in the war or not. And so this legacy of men repressed in this way and unable to express themselves, unable to show need and all this kind of stuff, it goes on and on. We need to combat it somehow, certainly in healthcare, which is where we need the maximum care. That's where we've got to make some room for actual kindness, care, love to get in the door to improve medicine, and if we do that, it will be integrative, like you described. Of course, we'll want anything to help those people, whatever will work. So, anyway, men, yes, it's a situation, and I'm very pleased you're addressing it directly in supporting men in the way you are.
At this, I just want to say, in this day, Robin, it's not, of course, I'm not saying men have it so bad, women are fine. Women have their challenges. Many times I have to say that, especially, for example, I've worked with women with breast cancer. You see them, they are mothers of three children with a full-time work. They have cancer, and they have to also manage the house and go do the treatments. And now we have to, you know, they have to do exercise. They have to, and they sort of like, they are unsung heroes, and they push. And it is also this behavior towards them that, as we said, this is what you do, and you have to do these treatments. People don't understand you. They can't. You can't be understood by other people not having cancer. The medical doctors and nurses, they don't have time as much. Now it's a bit better because they might have some specialized mental health nurses.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very lonely journey, cancer, for either men or women. For men, because our society tends to be a bit more treating men as disposable, I've seen it way more often, but I've also seen women go through the same dire path. Some people are luckier because they have good support at home.
Right.
But for example, in many cases, I had to sit down in an appointment with the partner of someone with cancer, and I had to explain to the partner how scary it was, how anxious they feel. And the partner would be surprised, said, "Really? Are you stressed? Are you scared? Because they can't understand how it is to have cancer and undergo all this treatment on top of your old lifestyle, which was already stressful and busy. And
Well, look, thanks for bringing that in. Yeah, absolutely. This is not to say anything about the, you know, it's a great ride for women. It's not. First of all, men and women both have to confront the same healthcare system with the same problems. It's no different for men or women. I think the thing which I wanted to highlight in this conversation is the thing you referred to earlier, is there's a natural conditioning in society for women to reach out for help when they need it. And that is a mitigating circumstance, which they're fortunate to have that. The men are, in general, repressed, and they're encouraged not to do that. Every man is an island. You know, this kind of, you know, be strong nonsense, you know, which actually it precludes that kind of support generally, unless they're lucky enough to find somebody like you or your support group or whatever by some means. So it's not common, that it's not understood by men that, of course, yeah, I'm going to need some support here. Let's go looking for it. It's just not built in there. And I think it's, I really want to highlight that, not to denigrate, you know, or any way compare with women or anything. It's not that. I just want to highlight this massive thing that men are suffering from, which is the idea that they're on their own with this problem and they've got to deal with it.
It can't be dealt alone. It can, but it's going to be so hard that it doesn't need to be so hard. And it could be an experience that actually connects you and makes friends, like with other men going through this journey.
Yes. Yes.
It could be a way that by reaching out, you will improve your already existing relationship, because now this is a calling for you to be more meaningful with your time, more purposeful, and it changes things. So don't do it to yourself and be by yourself, especially for men. Reach out. There are support groups that are free. In many cases, in your area, there is online support groups. When I started on this, I myself was attending prostate cancer support groups to get the perspective better of men going through the journey. The camaraderie and the support and feeling heard, understood, and being in a community with the men, with other men going through this like you, is such a healing force that it can be compared. With this, the prostate cancer coaching, health coaching and support group that I'm doing, everybody tells me that how powerful it's for them, not to just, because we are checking in with each member and they, let's say, report on a problem and then we create like an action plan so they will work on it until the next session. But basically being in a group in the presence of other men doing something. I'm not a victim. You know, I've been dealt this. This is unfair. I didn't deserve this, but I'm doing something. That choice, that power from that choice is where all of your power lies. And if you, it's very motivating for other people to see that, yes, I can do something as well. I can do something. Even though I'm feeling fatigued, I can't walk properly, having these hot flashes or whatever, there is something I can do. And on that word or the phrase that I can do something and I will, is all your power. And it's very healing. And yeah.
Fantastic. That's a great note to end on. We've run out of time. Thank you for that message. I hope there's lots of men listening who will grab onto that and use it to carry them forward. Love talking to you, Georgios. Thank you very much indeed for this conversation. I think I talk lots more about it. I think it's a topic that needs much more airing. And so very pleased to talk about it with you. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you for the time.
Bye. A very inspiring chat. Do look into Dr. Mavro Palias's YouTube channel, Healthier Through Cancer with Dr. Georgios. If you're listening to this on the very first day of broadcast, then our annual conference is tomorrow in Euston, London. You might just not be too late to grab yourself a ticket if you'd like to come. We've got an incredible program that's been put together in collaboration with Mark Taylor of Patient-Led Oncology. And our speakers are Dr. James LaPorta, Patricia Peat, Jane McClelland, Professor Joan Neal, Sylvie Beljanski, Sophie True, Dr. Rajendra Sharma, Dr. Siegfried Trefzer, Dr. Emma Davies, and Dr. Ariane Tavakoli. And subject matter is all focused on the title of the conference, What's Really Working? To see if you can still get a ticket, head over to conference.yestolife.org.uk. Thanks so much for listening today. Do make a point of joining me again next week when I'll be back with another expert guest for another Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.